there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Shouldn't you be at work?
Oh, here's Gascoigne. Gascoigne, he can finish it here! Paul Gascoigne! 2-0! Lampard!
Brilliant!
It was in, no!
That surely crossed the line!
Oh, oh,
it's so far in!
Thanks very much, Sepp Blatter.
Clean sheet, I call it. It's one of the most important things in football.
Nice to see home fans booing you.
Emil Heskey, could it be five? Yes, it is!
Paul Bowden to take it. Oh, and he's hit the crossbar!
Gerrard, it's Carroll! What a goal by the England striker! That's why he was brought in, and he's done the job.
Saved! John Pickford! England on the brink!
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, and it happened!
No!
Hit leg!
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of our Euro specials. It's quickly, Kevin, will he score? And England are still in the tournament. I'm Chris Skoll. Joining me, as always, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And here stood in the rubble that is Germany's Euro 2020 chances, it's Michael Mott.
Guten Tag.
I was thinking earlier that how little I cared about the kind of rivalry with Germany, like the long rivalry with Germany, but actually I quite like Germany as a nation now. I think they're one of my favourite non-English national teams. I'm glad we beat them, but genuinely, I'd just as happily beat Italy and Belgium. But do you know what I mean? When I got there, the German flags, they're amazing. I think they're great, Germany, now. But they're rubbish at football, but it's a bit like that's how it works, isn't it?
All the fans, or a lot of their fans, stuck around after the final whistle and were sort of applauding and cheering, which I thought was really, really classy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I thought? Do you remember Henning Venn came on here and said, like, oh, what do you remember of Euro 96 beating England? And he was kind of like, I don't really remember it anymore. Like, I feel like I don't really remember that Euro 96 game against Germany where we lost. I don't remember, like, Italia 90. Somehow those defeats feel a bit easier now since we've had this victory.
Well, let's see how it all goes. Because we have beaten Germany before in 2000 and in 2001, and both were followed by abject disappointment.
Do you think?
But I think the mentality has changed. I think what both of you have just said there, especially you, Josh, like, I think this is what it feels like to be a victorious and a good team,
yeah,
where you don't think about people you've beaten. You're not playing against Germany, you're playing against the idea of losing. It's irrelevant who you're playing against.
Yes, totally agree. Let the new rivalry with Ukraine begin. Right, do we have the 90 o'clock news?
Headquarters of ITN, News at 10, with
Chris Skull.
No cuddle for Mbappe. 90s Premier League legend maintains same goal celebration into his 50s. And Euros manager spotted at Wimbledon. And how Steve Frugger met his wife.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
It's quite packed.
It'd be very unlikely to get there.
I just wanted to start off by having a conversation we had when France went out. And Mbappe missed that penalty. He just walked down the tunnel. No one gave him a little cuddle.
I didn't like that.
Like, it blows my mind.
I didn't like that. But I felt like, I think it's your duty when you miss to hang around on the pitch to look sad for a bit so that yes. everyone knows you're sad. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, totally.
I think there should be a UEFA diktat that if you do miss a penalty, you do have to cry on the pitch afterwards. Just so that everyone's got that photo and everyone knows that it mattered to you.
Yeah,
the manager's got like tear sticks that they use in soap operas
yeah.
to put under your eye if you can't. See, I was thinking about this a lot, and I don't know whether I totally agree, because I think that's a reflection of an elite sportsman's mentality, where I think Mbappe was able to let it go almost instantly. And that's what the absolute best players in the world, the best sportsmen, you know, your Michael Jordans, your Tiger Woods, those people, they have to be able to go to a place mentally to sustain that level that they can detach. And although it matters, the moment it's happened, it's like, what's the point in dwelling? I'm just moving on to the next thing, the next goal, the next game.
Yeah, I don't want that. He basically turned... It's almost like he didn't break his run up. He just carried on. He
was, just ran around the goal, straight down the tunnel.
Round and he was going down the tunnel. He never actually stopped.
I mean, the French also, it's worth saying, they're always falling out with each other, aren't they? Like, they're always rowing.
France and Holland are the classic two, aren't they?
But yeah. I thought Mbappe was kind of the good guy, and I kind of had it in my head like Giroud was the baddie, and maybe Benzema too. But like the fact that no one came over to give him a little cuddle, maybe Mbappe's the baddie.
I think he's had some. I think some people have kind of said he's a bit of hard work in the lead up to the tournament, haven't they?
Yeah. Just on Michael's point about elite level sportsmen are able to miss a penalty and then just move on straight away. We all remember that David Batty famously fully dressed after England went out.
Yes, of course. World Cup 98. Elite level sportsman who moved on.
In a way, he's probably our most elite level sportsman.
Exactly.
No Pizza Hut advert for him. Never. No tears.
Whereas Southgate's on the pitch saying that he still thinks about it. He's the opposite.
Oh, wow.
I wonder how that miss from Mbappe is been received in France. Like, are there effigies of him, and, you know, is he being haunted, or do they have a different mentality, or can we expect in like 2 months time to see him in a Café Rouge advert?
I have this thing where, and I felt it a bit for Liverpool last season, like, how much of a shit do you give if you're France? You won the World Cup 3 years ago, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Say England won the Euros, right, which is, I'd say it's, you know, a 25% chance, right, at this stage. Say England won the Euros. Come Qatar, I don't know if it's going to mean as much. Do you know what I mean? In the same way that Liverpool's season probably wasn't actually that depressing for the fans because they'd broken that duck the season before. Do you agree?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know whether, like, is it a substantial enough footballing meal for me not to be hungry next time the next tournament comes around? I feel like, if anything, having tasted that, I'd be like, no, I want more of the same, please. I wouldn't expect it every single time, but I think it would sting a little bit still.
I'm not saying I'd be emotionally dead to the whole thing, but surely that league Man U won in 1993 was meant more to them than the one they won in 1997.
Yeah, Do you know what I mean? That's a good point. I've kind of war-gamed this. I've spent the morning thinking, what would it be like if we won? I'm thinking stuff like, would they give us a bank holiday?
Well, there's all COVID issues with the parade, presumably, as well.
Oh, man. But it would anyway. Be it would be magical. It would be an absolutely magical time.
Let's stick to the 90s o'clock news.
Yes, of course. 90s Premier League legend maintained same goal celebration into his 50s. Now. I'm going to send a message on the group chat. Do you recognise that man in the middle? It's the BBC's coverage.
Oh, yeah, well, I do. Yeah, look at that.
And what is peculiar about that celebration and that man?
Well, that's Alan Shearer.
It's Alan Shearer.
His hand up in exactly the way that... he used to hold his hand up. That's great, isn't
Alan
it?
Alan Shearer still doing the one-arm celebration after an England goal.
That
He's
is
incapable
brilliant.
Of celebrating with two hands. Rio's pumping both fists. Jürgen looking on despondent.
Oh, wow.
But Alan Shearer, one hand in the air. Still got
yes.
it.
Yes.
Still
That's great.
Does it.
We'll put that on our Instagram.
And I've seen a few people point this out. This is the last one. Euros manager spotted at Wimbledon. I'm going to send around this image. This is spectacular. Tell me who... This is a ball boy, I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah, looks like Mancini.
Mancini.
I think it's a line judge,
How good is
isn't
that?
It?
Line
I think
judge.
This is a line judge.
It's a line judge at Wimbledon who looks scarily close.
Well, what is the reason for that is that the Wimbledon line judge outfit is very similar to the Italian manager's suit, isn't it? Same style, isn't it?
Have we got time for How Steve Froggatt Met His Wife?
No, we haven't got time for that, I'm afraid. Oh,
for God's sake. Well, if England win the Euros, will we have time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But instead, let's have the electronic post bag.
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the electronic post bag.
You've got mail.
Now, misheard lyrics. This is amazingly from someone called David Boist, spelt B-U-I-S-T. So close to a 90s footballer's name. In the wake of England's glorious victory against Germany last night, I did the obligatory post-game listen to Three Lions. So great was my joy that I also listened to the 1998 version. I was shocked to hear the lyrics of the opening line of verse one were "Tears for heroes dressed in grey." As a 13 to 14-year-old around the time of the 1998 World Cup, I had tried to work out what this line said. Initially, I thought it was "Tea is for heroes dressed in grey," as in "Tears for tango, tears for tackle, etc." Having decided this couldn't possibly be true because "H is for heroes dressed in grey," I settled on presuming that it meant "tea," as in the hot drink, "is for heroes dressed in grey." I then spent the rest of the summer assuming that after England had been knocked out of Euro 96, they were rewarded for their heroic efforts throughout the tournament by giving cups of tea in the changing room after the game. This didn't strike me as remotely odd for some reason, presumably because the image of Southgate, Pearson, Anderton sitting around drinking tea after a hard-fought tussle with Germany seemed to perfectly fit for the players, the times, and the country as a whole. That's a classic Strange Hill, that, isn't it? But it's also a lovely image of the team, which I imagine isn't a million miles from what happened in that dressing room.
Tea? Straight after?
Well, we've discussed on many occasions the fact they drank a lot of tea in dressing rooms in the 90s and how strange that was.
I didn't realise that extended to the dressing room. I thought it was just people at home watching.
Oh, no. Well, actually, big news on that. Dear Quickly Kevin, this is from Anthony. Enjoying the Euros episodes, noticed on Instagram your post about the national grid during England v Germany, which reminded me to dig around in the documents I still have from when I worked at the National Grid in the late 90s.
Oof.
Yes, please.
Finally, some first-hand experience.
Oh, at last.
In those days, what was called TV pickup was definitely a thing. The grid control systems that had been prepared for kettles and lighting to be switched on at half-time or full-time, or even after particularly sighting EastEnders. We used to bring in weather data as well as TV listings, which would all be crunched in three giant mainframe computers at the data centre by what is now the Tate Modern. I haven't worked there for more than 20 years, so I have no idea if it's still such a big deal now. I think what's interesting there, for a start, is lights going on. Does anyone dim the lights for the football?
Well, no, you might start in daylight and then you're just not getting up to flick the switch because you're just so enraptured with the drama.
Oh, right.
Or perhaps people like moving into different rooms in their house and flicking on, you know, you've got 20 million people turning on their kitchen light pretty much in unison. You're not turning the lounge light off when you go.
Yeah.
You're sort of turning on and off each room as you go in and out. You're leaving the lounge on and suddenly 20 million households are using an extra light switch, a kettle, fridge doors. So
what I find astonishing is that the TV doesn't seem to be a drainer of electricity at all in this
especially
discussion.
In the 90s, those big cathode ray tubes, they've got to be taking a lot.
Well, you think, but clearly they're not nothing compared to a kettle, fair enough. But like, you'd think more than a kitchen light would be a TV, wouldn't you?
But is it to do with the massive draw and power in one go? Is that the issue?
Well, I'll carry on. Every time a TV pickup, i.e. demand picked up after a TV show happened, there would be an incident report. I can't find any for big matches, but I remember reading one for Argentina versus England in the 1998 World Cup. I've attached one. I mean, we can't put this on Instagram because it's too bleak, but he's attached one for the 3-minute silence after September the 11th to show us what the incident report looked like. That was a particularly huge pickup of 2,700 megawatts. A typical TV pickup would be 500 to 750 megawatts, which could be, say, 10,000 households switching a 60-watt light bulb on at roughly the same time. I find this absolutely fascinating that this happened.
Why has he kept all this stuff, though? That is mind-boggling. I'd never think to keep something like that. But, well, we've all learned something.
It is fascinating, isn't it, that happens?
I'll
tell you what, at 0-0 in that game, nobody was celebrating, let alone having a cup of tea.
Yeah. Like,
that was the most tense 15-minute break that I've ever had in my life.
Well, do you think also that because of the fall in ratings of scheduled television, it must be so rare now to have such big audiences watching something on television?
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. There's no sort of communal appointment to view where...
There used to be 17 million watching EastEnders generally.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? God,
so mad, isn't it?
And now EastEnders gets 4.5 million. It's like... And that's not a slam on EastEnders. That's just the world we live in. Right. Do you know what's always been very popular? What's really helped? Shall we have a couple of ways to improve the Euros?
Yeah.
This is a great idea from Neil Mitchell. Although many people hate VAR, there is a way that it could help make the game more exciting instead of less. And the way to do it is that you only reveal the VAR decisions at full time.
Go on.
Imagine excitement as the clock ticks towards 90 minutes and Belgium think they're 2-1 up on Italy, but they have doubt in the back of their heads. What if Lukaku's header in the 19th minute is chalked off for offside? What if there was a push on the box when De Bruyne scored the second? No game would ever feel safe. Never would a team dare to take it to the corner flag for fear of looking like fools when a 3-1 win could become a 1-0 defeat. Out of all the players gathered around the big screens, first of all, the number of VAR decisions is released. Like the cheer you get with 5+ additional minutes are announced. It would then be a great moment when the crowd would find out the 3 goals that have been reviewed, and could it be a win after all? Do you not think that'd be exciting? At the end of England v Germany.
There's no certainty.
There's no certainty. And I also think all you're asking for there is an absolute riot at the end of every single game. Like, it would be, there would be scraps on the field, in the stands.
How would you be feeling about, I know we keep going back to England v Germany. I'd have talked myself into both those England goals being offside.
Yeah.
They're so marginal, aren't they, actually?
So let's just say someone scores a goal from outside the box. It could never be offside. You aren't watching the build up to that goal, looking out for like an infringement or a foul that VAR might roll back and pick up. So I think you would suck every ounce of joy out of every hell. I think that's the worst suggestion I've ever heard.
I think it would be so fun at the end of a game. Well, let's see whether you'd like this one, Michael, from Tim Schofield. Good afternoon, lads. I was listening to a piece about Ben Benton, the young English lad who's playing in the Copa America for Chile, and it got me thinking. I often laugh and ridicule when fans come up with silly ideas to make football better, but my idea would revolutionise not only the Euros, but the Copa America and African nations too. Picture this. Before the start of the Euros, all managers are sat in a studio arena, similar to the tournament draw or Ballon d'Or location. But this time they're here for a draft. A special Euros draft where each country gets to pick a 26th player from the rest of the world. It'd be seeded so North Macedonia would pick first, they'd get Messi, for instance, and Scotland would go with Neymar. England would have the 20 or 21st pick, maybe get Mahrez or Alisson Becker. I often feel sorry for players from the rest of the world. They don't get to play in these elite tournaments. But it worked both ways. Imagine Bale hasn't had the major tournaments he should have, suddenly turning up for Costa Rica or in the African Nations Cup for Cameroon, or Kane playing up front for Ghana. The rule would be only one player allowed for this. You could go one step further and allow teams at a World Cup to take a player from an unqualified country. At least this country would then be able to watch with more interest. Think back to USA 94. Maybe Ireland could have had Gascoigne in central midfield. We would have loved it. What do you think of that idea?
It's interesting. Is only one player from each nation allowed to be selected? So if North Macedonia pick Messi, every other Argentina player is off the
transfer. No. It's only, you can have as many from each nation as you like, I think. But I think it would have added a bit of excitement to this Euros.
But if you, I'm going to veto it though, because it doesn't it mean less? Like if you win, if England had Lionel Messi, wouldn't it mean less if he scored the winner? You're kind of like, you wanted to know it's an English success.
I don't know. If you look at the way that the nation wrapped its arms around someone like Greg Rusedski, I think you very quickly want a Lionel.
We very quickly
want a Messi. In the same way that, like in the 90s, you'd be bringing in Ryan Giggs to solve the left-sided problem, you'd very quickly go, yeah, he's one of us. And Andy Murray is very quickly British when someone succeeds at a sporting event.
I agree. I think it would add. I mean, I think it'd be a very exciting way to start the tournament. Also, it'd be awful for the players because they'd just be shoved in these teams and they wouldn't have a choice. But I suppose that's international football for you at the best of times.
But would it put certain players in an awkward position though? Like, would Lionel Messi, if for some reason England could draw him, he might say no because of the Falklands or something like that? You know, because of like if there's a footballing. But what, like? Might he say no? And then that's kind of awkward.
I think if you want to play in the Euros, you have to agree that you'd go with whatever draft you're given. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And if you're the player that's picked, how motivated are you? Are you going to try your best? Because it's the future. This is never going away. And it's a legitimate chance for you to win a trophy that perhaps you might not have. So you might get patriotic, you know, Welshmen or Argentinians or Brazilians who historically would be, I'm not playing for England. But suddenly it's like, well, I can never win the Euros.
I think the thought of being the first player who's won the World Cup, the Copa America and the Euros would be like,
yeah,
that'd be the ultimate triple crown, wouldn't it? Because you'd have to do it with at least two different teams and the Africa Cup of Nations.
I'd like to run the data for perhaps the next episode where we look at some competitions where England were a part of it, but big nations weren't, and then cross-reference our squad versus, you know, weak links in that squad, for instance, where there are times where
who would you have picked for Euro 96?
I'm probably picking a confident penalty-taking centre-back instead of Gareth Southgate for Euro 96.
Steve Bruce. Yeah.
imagine, like, England calling up Gareth Bale or something like that. There's some call-ups. I mean, Gareth Bale sometimes couldn't be bothered to play for Real Madrid. What's he going to do?
It was kind of killed by the Olympics, but in the 90s, there was constant talk of a British team.
Yeah.
And constantly there'd be like, you know, in 4-4-2, they'd have the formation laid out of who would potentially be in the British team.
I think a lot of the objection from that came from the smaller nations, didn't they? Because the fear that those local FAs would then just become obsolete.
I don't think there'd be any need for it.
I kind of want it. Because I think your chances of winning international tournaments are increased by population size. Like that, I think that's just a fact of international
Yeah, of course.
And also, I think it'd be a great unifying thing for Great Britain. It's divisive enough as it is. Wouldn't it be great?
Do you think that's what it needs? Do you think that's what Britain needs?
Tony Blair really wanted that to happen. He really wanted to use football as a unifying force in to create more British culture. I think he campaigned as well for like Rangers and Celtic to be in the Premier League, to have one British league.
That seems like a very...
I think I understand it.
I know, I just think it feels like a very dodgy thing to campaign for when you're looking for votes.
I don't think he campaigned for it, but when in power, no. He was like lobbying for that.
Right.
But well, I'd love a British football team. Wouldn't you like... all of us together.
No.
Well, working with an Italian guy at the minute, and he just pulled me aside one day. He was like, "Why isn't there a British football team?" And I've really like he was like, "People in Europe just don't really understand it." And like, and then trying to explain it, it's like, "Well, historically, like England versus Scotland was the first international match, so it's like the home internationals, and like the basically parts of the United Kingdom would play each other, and then they had their own FAs. So it's like a 130-year-old problem that we've got here that we're just not really solving."
But it's not just football. It's every team sport isn't British.
Well, yeah,
they've got an English. No, but they're mainly individual sports, aren't they?
Yeah, well, you got team. I mean, we had a great British team in the football, didn't we? For the 2012, and like the women will have a team. But like it's the great British team in those events, isn't it?
I'd break it down more. I'd have a North and South England. I think we should just.
Well, I was going to suggest going the other way. How about we have a continent World Cup? So it's Europe versus South America, North America, Africa, etc. I'd watch that. I'd get on board as Team Europe.
I'd love that, actually. I have thought we should do something like that, shouldn't we? A continental tournament. I mean, Antarctica are fucked.
I mean, everyone's fucked except Europe, South America, and then the third best team would be Africa.
You think European team would beat a South American team?
I think that's the only interesting game.
I don't know. Africa would be good, wouldn't they?
Do you think?
I think if you could draw from the entire pool, I don't think it would be as bigger margin or as big a gulf as you'd think. I think if we went through and looked at the player pool and went, oh, okay, yeah, no, these
Salah, all of these players, Mane.
Yeah, all of these players play at the elite level.
Yeah.
But maybe if you're a lesser nation, you're allowed to draw some of your players from the unpicked players.
Like, oh, if you're Antarctica. I mean, we're getting into where it's going to be. It's getting very complicated now.
Well, tell you what, this is a great challenge for Patreon listeners. Give us your teams. Give us the contest. So what are we saying is North America and South America, or just saying America, what the whole North and South?
The question there is, would Christian Pulisic make the South American team? That's the question there.
So what are we asking for? A European side, an African side, an South American side with Christian Pulisic.
Can we give North America, can we give them Central America as well? Sort of open the pool up a little bit. There's probably a handful of players there.
Yeah, they'd have like Mexico and stuff, I think so. Because that's kind of who's hosting the next World Cup, isn't it?
Yeah.
After Qatar.
Give us your starting 11s of those continents and we'll see. We'll go through next Patreon episode and find out which continent is best. I'm excited. What would you call it? The Intercontinental Championship?
Yeah, it'd be a bit like the Ryder Cup, wouldn't it, in a way? Like just a smaller thing that you play every 2 years.
Love it.
I mean, you just need a round robin between America, Africa and Europe, really. I don't think you need the Antarctica or Australasia teams, really. This is how to send your teams in.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list @quicklykevin.com.
Right. What do we need to discuss here, guys? What would you like to discuss?
I think it's just how we're feeling 48 hours on from one of the biggest England results in a generation, arguably. Maybe even beyond that. Biggest one since 66, I think we said it would be if we won, and we did.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed that. Full episode is available on Patreon. Then we're back on the main feed on Monday.
So that's it. We'll speak to you again after the weekend. See you on Monday. Until then, Robbie Slater. See you later.
Go, Les! Hit Les! Hit Les over the top!